Blog Talk Radio.
Caregivers, have you ever felt like nothing? I mean, nothing is going right? Well, cheer up and welcome to Dave the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Program, where you'll learn how to avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout and how to survive the grief process. You know, with roughly 100 million caregivers in the U.S. and Canada alone, that's about a third of the population. That means that everyone probably knows someone caring for a loved one. They say that there's only three types of people in the world: those who are caregivers, those who will become caregivers, and those who will someday need a caregiver. I'm talking mothers of special needs and very young children, family members caring for elderly parents, spouses, siblings, or friends caring for disabilities such as Alzheimer's, dementia, cancer, stroke, heart disease, diabetes, multiple sclerosis, muscular dystrophy, AIDS, autoimmune diseases, and a host of others. I can go on and on. Join Dave and his guests now and every Wednesday at noon Pacific time as they discuss avoiding caregiver burnout and surviving grief. So find a comfortable place to relax, kick up your feet, and prepare to feel better and to receive practical tips and tools that you can start using immediately to get you through today and every day so you can survive your tomorrows. But not just survive, but to live life fully and abundantly. Yes, you heard me right. That is a possible goal to achieve. And now, here's your host, Dave Nassani. From Los Angeles, Big LA, welcome to all my listeners out there in Radio Land. I am Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver, coming to you live globally for the famous Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network. Yes, folks, I'm the guy who's going to help you and guide you through this very difficult journey called caregiving. And we're going to do our very best to help you avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout. Hey, we have an exciting show planned for you today. Carol Shockley has an amazing story about grief, and you do not want to miss this interview. I am your host, Dave Nassani, as I said, and this show is to caregivers of every kind. And the one thing we know about caregivers is that they are caring, selfless, sacrificial. Oh, yeah. And they're also very prone to burnout because they tend to put everyone else's needs above their own. Folks, come on. Learn a lesson from the airlines. Remember, every time you board a plane, you tune them out. Just when they start to tell you that if there's an emergency and an oxygen mask falls out of the ceiling, to put your own mask on first before you help your child with their mask. And the reason they tell you that is because they know that you will most likely black out if you don't put your needs above the needs of your loved ones. And then you won't be of any help to anybody with anything. And guess what? Caregivers are exactly the same way. Now, we also talk about grief and loss here and the devastating effects that it can have on us. It automatically throws us into this thing called the grief process. Ouch! Well, unfortunately, folks, there is only one way out of the grief process, and that's to go through the grief process. That's right. You can't go around it, can't go over it, can't go under it. You got to go through it. And hopefully we can help you through your grief and your loss if you happen to feel like you're stuck. Hey, if this is your first time tuning in, you can learn more about me and my show and my radio podcasts, my books, my videos, my blog. I know what you're thinking. You're saying it's all about me. But no, it's not. It's actually all about you. So you can see that's true by going to my website, caregiverscaregiver.com. That's caregiverscaregiver.com. And check us out and take that short quiz that we've got that you can learn if you are a candidate for burnout. And just for doing that, guess what I'm going to do for you? I'm going to send you my book absolutely free, One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships. $9.99 value, so this is a great deal. Now, I want to take this moment and thank my last week's guest, Christopher Berry, certified elder law attorney helping seniors, vets, and their families plan for long-term care. All right, enough of that. I'm going to go and unmute my guest now, Carol Shockley. Carol, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for patiently sitting through all that introduction stuff for our first-time listener.
Hi, Dave. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you again for allowing me to interview you today. I really appreciate it. And why don't you begin by telling us a little bit about yourself? Just who is Carol Shockley? Take 5 minutes or so, or if you need longer, and tell us what events you recently went through that plunged you into this grief process that you've been going through.
Well, Dave, I am a mom of three. I am a military wife. I am of 24 years. Over the past few years, I'd say it's been about 2.5 now, our son was accused of a sexual assault charges and has faced prison time. And so he has been in prison now about 1.5 years. And I never knew that you could actually grieve for the loss of someone going to prison until it happened.
Yeah. Wow.
And so it's definitely an eye-awakening, and it definitely teaches you a lot because you have to go through the grieving process even though he's still here.
Sure. And you just recently decided that you wanted to talk about this. I tried to get you to talk about this earlier, and you said, not now, Dave, not a good time, right?
Absolutely, because I don't think that we understand that we're grieving when we're going through it a lot of the time. And so those emotions are raw, those emotions are fresh, and you have to figure out how to balance them, because those around you don't completely understand unless they've been there. And so, or that's how we feel, is that they don't understand. And so it's even difficult on the family. As a mom, my kids are my life. And so you start to question everything that's happened along the way. And you start to question yourself. And so as you go through that process, you know, it's recognizing there's a separation. There's a separation of child and parent. There's a separation between person and, you know, each person, whether they're related to you or not. And so with him going to prison, it's helped to redefine those boundaries, redefine that he's a person and I'm a person, redefine that he's my son and I'm still his mom. And so that love never changes, but the boundaries do, and the understanding that there's things in life we can't protect them from, and there's choices that they make. And so the grief period is long, and it's hard, and it's all about acceptance and understanding, and it's about grace. And those around you, you know, are walking it with you and trying to walk aside you, and you have to either allow them to, or you block them out and push them away. And so luckily enough, my daughters are very super close to him as well, and we've all walked through that journey together, whereas with my husband, it's more or less of shutting that door, because as a dad, sometimes I don't know that he understands as much of my emotion for my son as a mom.
Sure. And you've come to some recent discoveries that you didn't know before. Talk about that for a little bit, and you know, I'm sure guilt is one of the emotions that you're feeling. And how did you come to the point of realizing that it was now time to talk?
And, you know, talking about guilt, at the beginning, as a mom, we have an intuitive nature about us. And if that's one message I could ever get across to moms, is always trust your intuition. I don't feel that it will ever lead us astray. It never has. I knew when my son was younger that he himself had been sexually assaulted. I knew instinctively, and I couldn't prove it. And no matter how much help I got him, there was a block and a wall for him. And so instead of pursuing it, after a while, you start to listen to the rhetoric that everybody says. You know, it's behavior issues. It's because he was abused as a child, you know, emotionally and verbally by his dad. You know, the outburst behaviors in school, the outburst behaviors at home, just anywhere we went, you know, intuitively, yes, some of that abuse did affect him, but also what I knew in my gut that he had been sexually assaulted affected him as well. And so to have it come out later on, when all this happened 2.5 years ago, I had him psychologically, forensically evaluated, to find out then that my intuition was right led to a lot more guilt of why didn't you continue to pursue that? Why didn't you, you know, press a little harder?
bring him to other specialists that could have, you know, maybe broke that wall down that he had, you know. So that guilt inside of myself was hard to overcome. It's a difficult, you know, a difficult place to be. Once, you know, there's nothing that I've done in the past that I can blame myself for. I've tried everything that I could possibly do to help him through his childhood, through his teenhood, until now. And even now, you know, I'm there and I'm supportive, and that's all he needs. He doesn't, you know, I can't hold his hand anymore, and I can't hug him and reassure him, and I can't always protect him. When those prison walls come down and he comes out, that's another stage that we're going to go through together. You know, what does life look like then? And as a mom, my intuitive, instinctive nature is I want to go back and protect again. I want to build that wall around him and make sure no harm can come to him. But through this process, I've learned that there is a separation and there is a boundary that has to, you know, between us, and that he is an adult and he does make his choices. And I've done everything in my power to assure that, and that he has the ability to make the right ones.
Mm. How old is he now?
He's 23 now.
So how long would you say you struggled with guilt? Or are you still struggling with it?
I don't feel as though I'm struggling with guilt. I think I'm in a much better place now. I'm much secure who I am and who he is and where we've come. I'm much stronger, and I think that's one reason I can talk about it a lot more freely now. I don't hide what he's done to anybody because I'm not going to be shamed by it.
Sure.
And I don't think I think that we don't talk about it enough, and that's why there's so much shame and guilt that goes along with it. When there's accusations of any type, if there's a murder, if there's a sexual assault crime, if there's I'd say like just the crimes that people don't talk about, the depression, the mental illnesses that people don't talk about, those always get more shamed on, or I feel people take more shame on for those than something like drugs. You know, my son's in prison for drugs. Mm. Okay, no big deal. You know, but when you say your son has a mental illness, or you say your daughter has a mental illness, or you say that, you know, a family member of yours committed murder, there's shame and there's guilt instantly upon that person. And I think these are areas we need to talk about, because the family themselves are going through their own blame cycle. They're going through their own guilt cycle. They're going through their own grieving. And we put no focus and no care into them as much as we do a victim and a victim's family.
And what about, you know, the classical five-step grief process? Do you feel like you went through, you know, denial and anger and bargaining and depression and acceptance? Or was it different for you?
I still think I went through all of it. Even the denial piece, sometimes I go, I don't think I was in denial. I understood everything that was happening. I understood where he was at. I understood who he was and mentally where he was. But I still think there was still a piece of denial. A piece of denial that he would actually go to prison, that he'd actually be taken away from us. Mm-hmm. And not be given that chance to go through, you know, a program on the outside. And so there was that piece of denial, because when those orders came, when the judge spoke those words and I saw him get cuffed in front of me, all that emotion, there was a ton of emotion that comes with that. And so though logically you understand it, emotionally it's a lot harder to handle.
Yeah, that was really tough. So let's shift gears now and talk about how people deal with you knowing what you're going through. For example, were there some people that would, you know, support you by doing nothing more than just simply being there for you?
You know, I had a lot of people that wanted to be there for me. But a lot of people that, and for me as a person, you know, I don't always want to be coddled. I don't always want someone to put their arms around me and say it's going to be okay. Because the reality it is going to be okay. But there's a lot of, again, this grieving process, a lot of anger, a lot of guilt, a lot of blame. And so, and not even just blame on my heart, my piece. The piece about this that I hadn't shared is that the sexual assault that he had committed wasn't against somebody that we didn't know. It was against family. And so it's all interfamily related. And so there was a lot of blame towards his aunt who didn't come to us, who went to her pastor to talk about it. And so, you know, the blame still, and I will say there's still sometimes that blame of looking at her life and looking at her children and thinking, you know, first the guilt and shame of my son did something to her kids, but is also of, why didn't you come to us so we could have tried to resolve this? Why didn't you come to us so my son wouldn't have to be behind those bars? Why didn't you come to us so we could have got him the help he needed? And so there's still that piece in there. There's still those emotions that are there that I'm working through. And so I still want to love her and I still want to be there, but yet my son is the one that's not with us.
Sure.
And her kids are with her. And so, you know, there's that anger, there's that resentment. You know, and that trying to understand why. Why didn't you talk to us? You know, we've always been close. So what was the blockage? Were you ashamed? Were you scared? You know, and I think those are conversations that need to be had one day that just aren't ready yet.
Wow. Well, let me ask you, how important was it for your friends and loved ones to just allow you to tolerate your silences? Because I'm sure there were days that you just didn't want to talk about it. You just wanted to clam up.
Well, the interesting piece about how life works is at that time, I was traveling on the road internationally for with my client, and I had only taken a few days off to go to the court, to fly back to New England, to go to the courthouse to be there. And then in a few days, I was flying back to L.A. to go back overseas to Australia. And so as life would have it, I was super busy. The only one who could snap me out of tears after 2 days of crying straight was my client, who had been to federal prison himself, and he called me multiple times to see how I was. And the second day he called and I was still in tears, he told me, you need to snap out of it. You need to pull back those tears. You need to grab a hold of your emotions and not let them rule you. Because what your son needs is a strong, supportive mom, not one who's crying, who's in distress, who's falling apart. He's like, so put your shoulders back, hold your head up high, and be there. Be what he needs and not someone he needs to worry about. And
that's
so
good
he
advice.
Was the only one I could hear that from. I couldn't hear that from anybody else. But he was in my life at that time for a purpose. And, you know, being as busy as I was, being back on the road, I just buried myself. I buried myself in the grief, and I just pushed it down so I could move forward with my life. People would call and check on me or text me and, you know, see me around. And I mean, like, you can hide it at that time. You know, I'm all right.
Yeah.
I'm fine. I'm cool. You know, things are great. But I had, emotionally, I was a train wreck, and I was falling apart, and work was falling apart. And there was mornings I'd wake up and I'd be in misery. And the misery was brought on by not dealing with it, by not dealing with the grief. And so when that chapter closed and I moved forward, then was I allowed to deal with it. And it took, you know, 30 days of just being in my room, in my bed, in my space to work through that and to find myself again. Like, it was hard, you know, and who am I and where am I going? And, you know, just to reground and to work through emotion, because emotion is, you know, it rules us or it doesn't rule us. We rule it. And so you have to allow yourself to go through it and accept it, but you have to also allow yourself, you know, to control it as well. And so family was supportive. They were quiet. They allowed me to come to them when I needed to and not push me further away by coming at me. And so I'm a processor. It takes me time to process emotion. It takes me time to process through anything that's going on. Even a conversation to have a conversation with you. It will take me even receiving critical criticism. I like to receive it, but it will take me time, at least 24 hours, to process through it and understand it and to see where it was coming from. Because as a person, we tend to jump to, you know, they're putting us down, they're blaming us, however we take people looking at us or criticizing us, however those emotions form for you, it takes time to realize that person's not coming through, not condemning us, not shaming us, not guilting us, but they're really trying to come from a place of love and grace. And so it takes time to get to work through that and to understand that.
Yeah. Now, you said that he was charged with drugs, not the sexual charge?
No, he was charged with sexual assault. He wasn't charged with drugs. He's never done drugs.
Oh, that's what you...
The one thing about sexual assault charges that is really, really gray in the court system is whether you're a pedophile, whether you've raped somebody, whether you are a man who's been indecent on the corner by, you know, going to the bathroom outside, they're all sexual assault charges. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't give you a range or a degree. You're just a sex offender and it doesn't matter. Whether it was a consensual act or not, it doesn't matter. If the age is there and rape's being charged with, you know, you're a sex offender. And so it's black or white. You either are a sex offender or you're not. There's no range or scale. And so that's something in the system that's trying to be worked out. But it's been years, and it's, you know, I don't expect it being something soon. And so these guys, you know, live with this. And even when they get the help that they need, even when they go through recovery, you know, statistically, 80% of them never return to prison because the act is never recurrent.
Right.
But you do have those few that continue to go back, and those few, you know, ruin it for the rest. And so when they come out of prison, what's the grieving process then? What's that look like? And so that's a place that I'm not at yet, but that is a place that we're headed. And so, you know, I think it's great that we have this time to become strong.
And how often are you in contact with him?
I hear from him on a daily basis. Via the phone, which is good for him and good for us. At the same time, you can only talk so much about the same thing. And his life is stagnant. He's taking college classes. He's taking mental health classes. He's taking grieving classes. He's taking, he works at the workshop, at the wood shop there. So he's always consistently busy. He plays sports. But... you know, it's still stagnant. It's the same people, same thing every day. And so until he gets into the program, there's a sexual assault program there that they go through for 18 months, you know, he has to keep doing what's best for him. Or he can choose not to do anything and just sit in his cell and do nothing all day.
Yeah.
So I'm thankful that he's not like that.
How is it he ended up on the other side of the country?
That is where our family's located. Originally, so we're a military family, and we move every 3 years, or we had. And it's interesting that his father was an abuser when he was younger, and he always wanted his dad's attention and acceptance. And so his dad has turned a new leaf and has gotten the help that he needs. And, I mean, it's great to see him on a life of recovery and to see him and his son now building a relationship, but it took prison for that relationship to be established.
Mm. And so he went to prison too.
You know, he didn't. My husband never went to prison. My ex-husband never went to prison. He just got charged with simple assault in the past. But he's, you know, going to counseling and seeing a therapist on a regular basis, which is great. But as it would be, my son, when he graduated high school, wanted to go back to the East Coast to go to college to be near his dad. And so the unfortunate piece is that his dad never had an interest really in building that relationship until my son went to prison. And that came with all the guilt and all the shame. And that's a whole other area for him.
So good things are happening through this.
Absolutely. There's been healing.
There's been relationships being brought back together and healed, and there's other relationships that have been severed.
Yeah, the Bible says all things work for good to them that love him and are called according to his purpose. And it's sometimes it's really hard to see the good that can come out of terrible, terrible things. But his word is true. Is his treatment, I'm just curious, in prison any worse because of his particular sexual crime?
Oh, no. Actually, what's kind of crazy, and we didn't know this, you know, you learn as you go through, is 75% of the prison are sex offenders where he's at.
Wow.
And so
wow.
Yeah, that's a high statistic. I was like, no way. But 75% of them in there are sex offenders. And I'm like, that's just crazy. But they're not all from New Hampshire. They're not all from that area. Some of them are brought in from other states and relocated there. So that's an interesting concept as well.
So it's not true what you hear on TV that prison inmates, you know, go after child molesters and they make life really hard for them. Not true.
And I would have to say that is true. So the
but he's in a place where 75. He's in a place where 75% of them. I mean, that's a lot.
That is a lot, but they are protected. There's different in the prison. There's different units. I'm trying to think of what the words are called. There's different units and there's different housing segments. And so there's a general population that, you know, they try to keep all the drug addicts, all the even the life sentence guys are in a separate unit than everybody else. And so they segregate them because there are problems. So when my son first got in there, you know, he's called a skinhead, and that's some type of term for a sex offender. I don't get it, because a skinhead out here to us isn't the same.
Sure.
So the names and the things that happened, he got a job in the kitchen, and he got harassed. And so his supervisor really liked him, and instead of allowing the harassment to go on, he changed jobs, and he was sent to he got a job at the wood shop. And so there are times that I've had to worry about him, but most of the time, I haven't.
Well, sounds like God's protecting him. I mean, in the Bible, even Joseph, you know, was sent to prison, and God was there blessing him. So thank God for his grace. Listen,
you know,
Carol,
my son
take
that every day.
I was going to say we're going to take a short break, and we will be back in a couple of minutes, so don't go away. One arm, one leg, 100 words. Overcoming unbelievable hardships. Available on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. Hear what Lynn Barrington, best-selling author of Daddies and Daughters, published by Simon & Schuster, has to say about it. You think you have it bad? Read this book. This is a beautiful, genuine story told from the heart. It's inspiring and easy to read. When you finish this book, you'll be able to look at your concerns in a new light. How about the reaction of 9-time Grammy and Dove Award winner, the godfather of contemporary gospel music, Andre Crouch? This book will be an encouragement to anyone who reads it. Charlene just won't let the promises of God go. She's hanging on to her positive, godly attitude, and I look forward to that day when she will receive all that she's believing that God will do for her. In the meantime, she has not let her circumstances get in the way of her faith. Her smile has gotten just as big as it was before her stroke. She's not just a survivor. She's more than a conqueror, as the Bible states. And I'm glad to know her and her testimony. Read this book. You'll be encouraged regardless of what you're going through. So get your copy of One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships today on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. But if you purchase it on the author's website, Dave and Charlene Nassani will personally autograph your copy. Just go to OneArmOneLeg100Words.com. That's OneArmOneLeg100Words.com. Oh, and while you're on his website, don't forget to take our short quiz to help you assess if you are a candidate for burnout, and if so, where you are in the burnout process. And just for doing that, Dave will send you a special gift. There are a lot of resources, videos, and links to his radio podcast on his website. Go to CaregiversCaregiver.com. That's CaregiversCaregiver.com. And now, let's rejoin Dave Nassani and his guest on Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver Program on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network. And we're back with Carol Shockley, who's dealing with the grief process since her son had to go to prison for sexual crimes and dealing with the emotions and the guilt and everything. Carol, welcome back. How important was it to have people listen to you in an accepting and non-judgmental way? I mean, what were you feeling? How were people communicating with you? Because it's so hard for people to know how to communicate someone who's grieving, right? Sometimes they say the right things, but most of the time they say the wrong things.
Well, and I think, Dave, people know that my son went to prison, and then when they ask me why, you know, that takes another, that takes a step of courage to be able to share that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it takes strength. And so now I'm in a place that I think everybody needs to hear and everybody needs to understand. And people have been really accepting, and they've been understanding. But then I think that they feel bad. You know, they feel bad for me, and I'm like, there's no reason to feel bad for me. You know, my son's where he needs to be. He's facing his crime. He never once denied it. He,
mm-hmm.
at the moment he was asked, he was very upfront with it and very, you know, it was kind of like a sense of relief at the same time.
Sure.
Now I can get the help I need. Now I can talk about it. Now the others know, and I don't have to hide this secret any longer.
Mm.
And so he's in a great place where God is just being able to minister to him and love on him. And he was started counseling before he went into prison, and he had a faithful servant of God that just came alongside of him who does sexual assault counseling or sexual counseling. And he himself had gone through a sexual assault charge at one point in time. And so he's been a great help to my son. And my son and him still connect, even though he's in prison. He calls him once a week, and they still talk. And he has a counselor inside the prison cells as well. But my son said God couldn't have reached him or got a hold of him where he needed him to be if he didn't go, if he wasn't there. And so he's had some relationships that have been taken away from him since he's been there, which
mm-hmm.
for him himself has been a grieving process. And so
what?
He's learning how to grieve and how to go through that and how to find peace in himself and, you know, redemption. And so that's
yeah.
been, that itself has been phenomenal. He read the book, What About Grace, by Philip
mm-hmm.
Yancey. And he said, you know, Mom, you've always taught us what grace is, and I never understood it. He said, until now. He said, and,
yeah.
you know, even what Christ did for us by giving us grace and dying on the cross. And so he said, you know, he was raised with those beliefs and those values, but he never fully got it until now. And so it's cool to see where his life is and where it can go. Even
Absolutely.
Though, you know, human nature goes, oh, no, when he gets out, he's going to have this on his record. And people, you know, look upon, are going to really frown upon that. And so many
uh-huh.
barriers will be there. And absolutely. But there's so many others that won't. And so many opportunities
yeah.
for him in lives that he can touch and change.
Yeah.
You know, and even if it's speaking to the youth about that are going through this process, I think more importantly, when I tried to get my son help when he was a teenager for, even in this state, for help in the sexual area, there was no one there or no one willing to be there. And so unless he was accused of a crime, there was no help for him. And I was like, seriously? So now that he has been accused and has been convicted, he's behind walls. And so you try to avoid that, and there was nothing there. And so those are areas that really are powerful for us that I'd love to see change for the future.
Sure. Well, he's got a ministry ahead of him. A lot of positive good things. That's great. So, Carol, let me ask you, what's your reaction to the use of cliches like think of all the good times, this too will pass, and a million others? How does that set with you?
and this too will pass. Well, it's true that this too will pass, but it does not take away. Unfortunately, it doesn't take away all the pain and all the hurt and all the harm that it's done mm-hmm. already. I myself was sexually assaulted as a child by the same individual that assaulted my son.
Oh, so, my.
And that was a family member. And so at the same time where he's my family member, he always will be, but I've crossed that line where I allow who I want in my life and who I want in my space. And this individual isn't allowed in that space any longer because I have to protect myself and I have to protect my family. And though it's already harm's already been done, that doesn't mean I can't move forward in that same mindset. And so it's caused a lot of harm, and those things change. You know, this too shall pass. It will pass, but that doesn't mean the situations will pass or that those boundaries will pass because they'll still be in place. I don't know. Like, life goes forward. We can't live in the past, but it doesn't mean we forget. We may forgive, and you know, the harm and the pain that's come, but we don't forget it, and right. you move forward in a totally different mindset. And I keep thinking, man, it's been a year and a half. My son's been in prison. We only have 2.5 to go. Time goes by fast, but sometimes it doesn't.
Sure. Has that family member been to jail or is getting help that was responsible?
Unfortunately, no. And there's still denial in that space. And so...
There's no way to prove it, I see.
There's no proving it. There's no changing it. Where he's at, the excuses, you know, I've heard them all. There's a mental illness problem. There's mental... You know, he's getting help for his mental state, and to know that right now where he's at, there's drugs involved, and there's alcohol involved, and there's mental handicapped involved, and there's all these things that are prominent in this person's life, and so being in the state that they're at, you know, hearing he's getting help in some of those areas is great. How many other people has he affected? I don't know. I just know the harm that it's brought to our family and, you know, the lines that I've had to create because of that. It's hard. It's a difficult spot to be in.
Is he allowed to be around other small kids that this could happen again?
You know, where his life is, there is no access. He's been in so much trouble with the law that right now he's in some type of program that he has to check in with, you know.
Yeah.
Check in every week. He has to be drug tested every week. He has very limited time to himself. He's not in prison, but he's in some type of program that he doesn't have access to his whole freedom as well. And so in some ways that's good.
Yeah.
He's always had a socially awkward, socially bound situation anyway. And so the people that he's affected that I know of have always been family. And so I was always super protective being around him, never allowing my children to have time with him. Mm-hmm. In that one time I wasn't there and he was given access to my kids, harm came to him. And so that, you know, that one time carries a lot of weight with it. Because all it takes is a one time to change someone's life. And,
wow.
You know, I guess that frustration comes, Dave. There's a frustration that comes to the point that, you know, you know so many people that have gotten away with things. Like, I look at his situation, and he's gotten away with this for so long. Where I look at my son's situation, and I think, man, really? And so... There's that frustration.
Maybe that makes your son luckier than him.
And you can take it as anger, you can take it as why did this happen? But again, all things happen for the good. All things will be made good and be made right. And so there are blessings in it as well.
So, forgiveness. Have you forgiven him?
You know, I used to, and I have forgiven him, and I still love him. But forgiveness still can come with a price of I don't have to accept him into my space, into my life. And so I don't know that all people understand that. Because I still hear, well, if you've forgiven him, then you need, you need to have him in your life.
You need
to love him through this. And I'm like, I don't. The Bible never said that. You know, the Bible says I need to forgive and I need to show grace. And Christ forgave me, and he forgave him. But at the same time, I have to be protective. I have to be wise. And if I don't need to let the foolish in. And so I don't. I've forgiven him and I love him. And he'll always be who he is in my family. But he'll never, I just never have to let him into my space.
Healthy boundaries.
They are healthy boundaries. And I don't think many people understand healthy boundaries.
And we have the right to choose.
It took me a long time.
And we have the right to choose who we let into our circle.
Right.
That's
and who we have to, who we have to separate ourselves from. You know, negative, negative, negative always brings negative. Positive, positive, and, you know, more positive people always bring positive light to us. We move forward, and we move forward with peace. You know, misery loves misery, and I'm not going to sit in a place of misery.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I need to be healthy and strong for my son to be healthy and strong, so he sees that. I love that my son can minister to the guys in prison with him, and that the guys are always surround, you know, come to him, and he can uplift their spirits. And they're there to do the same for him. And I love that. Like, I feel like he has a ministry right where he's at, right where he needs to be. And so, and he's made some great friends. And they watch out for each other. And a couple of his friends are on different units, so they make time to meet out in the courtyard just to have that fellowship time. I think that's a blessing. You can ask. My son never had friends. He was always socially awkward. We had one or two that understood him and could accept his, you know, his socially inept ability to be around them.
Right.
But in prison, he's actually learned how to make friends and how to move through transition. Transition was never great for him, but he's had to. Like, only the inner, you know, the inner person that was inside of him has come out. And he's had to grow so much because he's had none of us in there to help him through it or protect him or to block those things that would come at him. So through this, he's a stronger person. He has great friendships. He's learned those boundaries. He's learned how to, he's had to say no to people. And that's huge. You could take such a horrific act and make it into such an amazing grace and story and redemption.
Mm.
And to learn so much through it is positive and great for him and for us.
So let me ask you, Carol, how you mentioned before there was a period that you just couldn't stop crying. How much tears and sorrow is normal and healthy?
I think you have to allow yourself to grieve. You have to allow yourself to feel those emotions, because when you don't, you know, it brings more harm to you in all areas of your life. And so I think the few days that I had of tears was great. It was a release. I think tears help release some of that grief that we carry. For me, that's what they do. There's times that I just lost my dog. You know, I had a companion for 13 years, and he passed away a couple weeks ago. There's times that it just hits me hard that I'll walk in my home, and he's not there. And there's times where tears just come. And it's okay to allow them to come. Don't bottle them up. Let them come and let them wash through and renew you, because that's what you need. Sitting in that spot for more than for too long of a period just brings you more into a depression and holds you down. So you have to find that balance. I was thankful that I only had a few days in someone that called me up and said, pull it together. Because I think I could, my life could have fallen apart at that time. I could have just bundled myself up and stayed in my hole because nobody would, everybody was too afraid to say, suck it up, you know, pull it back, be strong for him. They were too sensitive to that. And so, you know, for us, I think 72 hours was enough time. But allow yourself, when those waves come, to swim out with them because it's refreshing. And they're going to come. There's not going to be times that they don't. It's going to happen.
Yeah. Losing a pet is huge. I had a pet grief loss counselor on my show. I encourage you to go to my website and look it up. It's a great show, especially if you're grieving your pet's loss right now. It will really help you. did you try to fill in conversations with a lot of outside news? In other words, you know, like you already touched on this. You mentioned, you know, when your client encouraged you to just kind of suck it up, and you said you were feeling stronger when you just got into your work. Did that really help or did it hurt?
For me, it was keeping life moving. You have to keep moving in your life. You can't just allow a horrific situation, whether it's a death, whether it's prison, whether, you know, it's a loss of any type. You can't allow it to stop you in your tracks. I think you can take the time to learn to understand it and to accept it, but you have to keep moving and do having life around you, work, friends, social engagements, getting out of your house just to get the feel the energy outside and to be around people helps you move forward quicker than hiding in a room exclusively alone. And so even if there's people present in that room, if you don't get out and continue moving, I think grief could really, really hurt you and really harm your life. And so for me, I was so thankful that I had that I was on the road as much as I was and as much as I was being out there because it helped me push through. It helped me have something else to focus on than on myself and on my son. And so just even when my son was able to start calling made life that much easier. Like, okay, yeah. I can hear his voice. And so I know he's okay and I could keep going. But we have to allow ourselves some period of time, but not an abundance of time. Does that make sense? Like,
yes.
For me, even with my dog, I mean, I'm thankful I have another little, you know, companion pup, and she's with me, and she went through her own grief, and I'm sure there's still days that she does, but we have each other, and, you know, we still have to move forward.
Yeah. You know, some people say that you will grieve for the rest of your life. Do you believe this?
Mm. Well, I still, my dad passed away about 7 years ago, 8 years ago, and I still miss him. I think even missing him sometimes is a grief. It's part of grieving. I think there's times of sensitivity. Things happen that bring back memories, and you just allow it. Allow yourself to relish it for the moment,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then keep going forward. And think about it, enjoy it, recognize those emotions, because I think sometimes we don't recognize that emotion for what it is, and that sometimes harms us. My dog passing away, there was a couple days that I was like, oh, I'm fine, you know, moving forward, positive in, positive out, but it was a way of burying it, and then it would hit me,
sure.
and I'd be like, oh, I am missing my dog. I am missing my dad. You know, I am missing my son. But stopping to understand that feeling is huge. Recognizing it and acknowledging it for what it is.
Yeah.
Because then you allow yourself some peace.
Is it extra hard on birthdays or holidays or anniversary dates?
I think in the beginning, the first year was. Now it's not so much. It's kind of something, I don't want to say that you look forward to, but I'm like, okay, so we have two more birthdays to go through. You know, there's times, okay, we have weddings. We have a couple of my stepsons have gotten married, and the whole family has been together. We've had all the kids in one place except my son. And those days are hard. You know, those pictures are hard because those are real raw memories of going, he's in prison during that time. His niece being born, my granddaughter, you know, that's difficult. She was born in December and he wasn't here. He wasn't here to meet her right away. You know, it was exciting to go and introduce her to him, but he gets to know her by pictures. He doesn't get to know her and experience her growing up right now. And so, those times are difficult. Those times are real. And you want to include him as much as you can. And so, yeah. You know, we talked about renewing vows at one point in time. But, you know, that's something I don't want to do until all my kids are present. And what does that look like? You know, and so there's decisions in life that have to be made around the circumstances. And then there's things that happen that you just can't avoid. And they bring back the memory of where he's at and why he's there. And those emotions come to it. You know, and they're mostly emotions of sadness.
Sure.
You know, sadness that he can't be a part of it.
You know, Carol, I can't believe this hour has gone so fast. In the last couple of minutes, let's just talk about how support groups either helped you if you used them or if you didn't. And then, you know, how viewers can get in touch with you. Maybe they want to be a part of your support group.
Well, there's a couple of things that I found, Dave. There's not a lot of support. there's not a lot of support for the criminal's family side. And he's a victim in his own right. And so, but because he's committed the crime, the family's at blame too. And I know society doesn't blame the family, but there's no help for the family. There's no support groups for them. There's no, you know, there's as much as there are people throwing it at the victims and the victim's family, you don't see that on our side. And so that's one thing I'd love one day to look into more and create more of. But what I have found are there are sites. There's a site online called Mothers with Sons in Prison.
Mm-hmm.
That was a wonderful site for the first 6 months of my first year of my son going to prison and being in prison, learning about prison, learning about what, you know, moms go through. So it's Mothers and Sons in Prison. And then, Dave, there's this other great ministry, and it's based out of here, Las Vegas, Nevada, and it's called God Behind Bars.
Mm.
And it's a prison ministry, and they're starting locations all over the country. I think there's six other states that they're in, but they bring God behind bars. And so they go in and they minister to the criminals and to the, you know, the prison mates, I'm not sure what we call them, but they go in and they get to minister to them. There's other ministries, of course, but God Behind Bars has been here for us. And one of the things that they're working on is a release program. What happens once these guys and girls get released? And what happens for their family? And how do we help their family? You know, what's that aftercare look like? So what's, you know, and eventually it's starting that program of how can we care for their families while their children and their family members are in prison? How can we support them? And so, you know, I encourage people to check out God Behind Bars and get involved if they have a prison, you know, somebody they know that's in prison. Because those are new programs that are up and coming, because those are new needs that they're realizing that people have. And so, you know, how do you support those families?
Yeah, well, It sounds like you might have a new ministry on your hands, Carol, in addition to your son having his own.
Absolutely.
So I want to thank you again for allowing me to interview you and agreeing to this finally. And thank you to my listening audience for tuning in today and every Wednesday at noon Pacific Standard. And don't forget that all of our shows are recorded podcasts, so you can listen to the same link any time of the day, day or night, 24/7. They're also on our website, caregiverscaregiver.com. And also iTunes as well. And don't forget, when you are on my site, please take that quiz, short quiz, are you a candidate for burnout, so that you can assess where you are in the burnout process and get my free copy of the book, One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships. So until next week, may God richly bless you. Thank you for joining Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Show. Make sure you tune in every Wednesday at noon Pacific Time and anytime afterwards on podcast to catch more of Dave and his tips to caregivers on avoiding burnout and surviving the grief process right here on the Worldwide Block Talk Radio Network. Goodbye.